Hello, everybody. Welcome to Blake's Book Club. We're doing it. That's it. It is happening. It is midnight sun. It is something that I cannot believe that I'm doing. Going back to the world of the Cullens and Bella Swan and Forks, Washington. Oh, my goodness gracious. It is here. Funny story. I remember when the books came out. And I remember very shortly after, the movie was being made. And I remember seeing all of... Actually, here is a specific truth. I remember going to see The Dark Knight in Providence, Rhode Island. And I remember seeing the advertisements for this thing called Twilight. And, you know, it was Robert Pattinson's face on it and the whole thing. And I remember thinking, what the hell is this? Like, what is this? not knowing, of course, that it would be something my wife would get me into, which is something that she always does. And of course, we dove headfirst into the world of Twilight, and she was so interested in it because I remember her saying that the way that Stephanie Meyer writes butterflies was something that she just fell in love with. And it's something, too, that it intrigued me when my wife told me that, because she was reading the books before I did. So then, of course, she was reading all the books, and one day she came home. I came home from work or something, and she was sitting in bed crying, sobbing, saying, Blake, you're never going to leave me, right? You're never going to leave me. Just in the woods. And of course, she was reading the second book of the Twilight Saga. As you all know, Edward leaves Bella. And my wife took this very seriously. and asked me if I would ever leave her. And of course, I said no. And here we are, 10 years later. 11 years from that point. And we're still together. We just celebrated our 10th anniversary, wedding anniversary yesterday. So that's awesome. But yes, we are here reading Midnight Sun. This is the first official entry into Blake's Book Club for Midnight Sun. I did not anticipate doing this, but when so many people said that they were interested in Midnight Sun and a version of Blake's Book Club for it, I said, you know, we got to do it. We got to read it. And I think Mary will be joining me a lot more in this book club than in previous book clubs, because she's just so damn interested. And while she has not yet read the first chapter, because I just got the books today, and she has not yet read the first chapter because she's working, and she has a little bit of a meeting going on right now. I'm sure that once her meeting is done, she'll be diving into the first chapter tonight. So that will be that, because we're nerds, and that's what we do. And we are here to serve you guys, because you all make this happen. If not for you, the members at Join the Nerd Clan and OutlanderCastClan.com, none of this is possible. Me reading Midnight Sun, I mean, yes, I'd be reading Midnight Sun regardless, but I wouldn't be analyzing it the way that I am tonight, and you would not be privy to it if not for your support. So before we get into anything, I do want to say thank you. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. Thank you, thank you, thank you for supporting myself and my wife, our family, this company. Without you, we aren't able to do any of it. Never mind Midnight Sun. We wouldn't be able to do Outlander Cast. We wouldn't be able to do the Potterverse. We wouldn't be able to do This Is Us 2. We wouldn't be able to do any of it. We wouldn't have the studio that we have. We wouldn't have the live videos. We wouldn't have anything if not for you guys. You are the lifeblood that makes this company work. You are the lifeblood that gives my family the life that I think it deserves. You fracking rock. So please consider this as just, this is my honor. This is this is something that I have to do for you guys because you make my life go. And if this is part of a way I can thank you, then please accept my utmost, most honest, most deep-hearted thank you. And of course, we get to do it in the fun world that Stephanie Meyer created with with vampires and talking about killing people, which is awesome, right? So having said that, let's get into chapter one of Midnight Sun, The First Sight. So my first thoughts are this. I am so, man, I cannot believe how comfortable this world is for me, getting back to it. Now, it's been, many, many years since I read the last book, Breaking Dawn, which I was not a big fan of, by the way. I thought Breaking Dawn was okay, the way that it ended. It was fine. I was really not a fan of the films. Oh my god, the Breaking Dawn Part 1 and 2? Nope. Out on those films. I was a big fan of the first three films. But splitting it up between the two was not a smart idea. I understand why they did that, but no, I'm out on that. But regardless, it's something that, like, I could see all the characters in my head, and though it has been a cultural phenomenon, the Twilight Saga, and it was one that I happily took part in, I thought that I would take more time to get back into the world. I thought that it would take more convincing for me to get back into the world, but the way that I was reading it and the way that it felt as I was reading it, it felt like getting on a bike. You know, those first few pedals are a little awkward, and then all of a sudden you get the hang of it and we're back into it again. And hearing the names of Emmett and Jasper and Alice and all those guys and all the people like Jessica Stanley and Angela and Mike Newton, and oh man, it made me laugh. It made me laugh. One of the things that's happening too is that I'm having a hard time keeping it all straight, meaning I know the future of what is about to happen, and I know obviously the course of events, so I'm trying not to have them color my opinion of what's being written. And I think that this is the approach that I'm going to take with this book, is I'm going to take it under the guise of, and it's hard to do this, take it under the guise of, this book is a standalone book. It should not be compared to the original series. Now, I understand the necessity of comparing it and using it as a companion book, as actually Stephanie Meyer puts it in her little foreword or whatever it is on the paper jacket. You know, she says it's a companion book, and it, yes, it is. It helps amplify the world. It helps amplify her universe, especially as it relates to Edward, and even the rest of the family. But I kind of want to take this as a work unto its own. Since we already know the story, since we already know how, what happens and how it transpires, what does this book add? Right? What justifies its existence? Yes, we're all here because we love the world, right? Even if it's a guilty pleasure, of which it is a very guilty pleasure of mine. An extraordinarily guilty pleasure. It's like watching, it reminds me of watching like Jersey Shore back in the day, you know, when it was out and you didn't want to say that you were watching it all the time because it was trash, but you were watching it because it was trash and you enjoyed it and you loved it. Yeah, that was me. So the Twilight Saga, while taken very seriously by a lot of people, and rightfully so, it's their version of Outlander, let's say. It was a very guilty pleasure of mine at the time. Geez, when it came out, I was, I was 20, when the film came out, I was 25 or 26. Here I am, 37, reading it now. But what does Midnight Sun do to justify its existence? Yes, it's a companion to Twilight, but what does it add? What is the value of it? And I'm happy to say that so far there is value. I mean, even in the first chapter. And not only is there value, it is written in a way that it doesn't take your knowledge of the world for granted. It doesn't say, yeah, you already know all this stuff, so we're just going to get to the meat of it. We're just going to plop you in. No. Stephanie Meyer does a great job in introducing you back to the characters, introducing you to the relationships and how it all works. It starts with a conversation between Alice and Edward, and how it's how they're trying to protect Jasper, who is their brother. And you're getting a very good characterization, if not a little on the flat level, you're getting a very basic idea of these characters. You're getting the idea that, you know, there's the pretty one who thinks she's amazing. And then there is the one who is very fast and very like flighty, but, you know, is always looking forward, and they have secret powers. And then there's Emmett, who's a meathead. There's Jasper, who's relatively new to this lifestyle that they've apparently chosen, which is to go blood free, you know, like from humans. You still don't know what they're doing. They've mentioned hunting, but you don't know what they're hunting per se. You get the idea that their eyes are golden brown as opposed to blood red, because it's a choice of lifestyle, which you would infer if this is the first book that you're reading. You're inferring that if they're drinking human blood, their eyes are red as opposed to golden brown. So you're getting a good characterization of the people that are already involved. You understand their relationships, how they relate to each other. You understand that they've been alive for a long time. Edward says that he's been human blood free for 70 years, that he has two medical degrees, apparently, which is something that I don't recall from the original books. I could be wrong. Again, it's been a long time since I read Twilight, the first book of the saga. But I don't recall that. And since you understand the relationships pretty early on, you see how these people work with each other, how it is, it's something that they're in a lifestyle that seems easy. And even Edward says it's something that he's put together and he's perfectly fine with it. And this is how most stories start. Someone who is in a place of stasis. A stasis that they're content. They're not fully happy. They're not fully engaged, but they're content. They're moving on with their life. And it's something that they just coast through. Like, I think of, I always go back to Finding Nemo, because Finding Nemo is one of the perfect movies. It's almost a perfect movie in every way. I think of Marlin, when, you know, after his family dies, and all he's left with is Nemo, who happens to be handicapped in a certain way. But he's living life, but he's content. He's not happy, but he's content. And then something happens. Of course, Nemo disappears and he has to go on this adventure. What I'm getting at is this. Edward is content with his life. And he's gone through 70 years of not feeding on humans. He's gone through all different kinds of schools. It's been a very long time since someone has recognized him as a vampire. And even if the people that surround him go down that road, the Cullens leave. And you're getting all of this from just his thoughts. There's very little dialogue in this chapter. Very, very little dialogue. And one of the things that as I'm reading it, it's Stephanie Meyer's use of the exclamation point bothers the hell out of me. And it's funny because I remember reading it at the time, reading Twilight, and her use of exclamation points pissed me off then too. And because people so often misuse them, and Stephanie Meyer is definitely one that misuses it. She uses it after almost every goddamn sentence. And I get it. It's that style of writing. It's supposed to be very expressive, and it's supposed to highlight, you know, certain emotions and feelings and desires and needs and wants. But man, overuse, total overuse of the exclamation point. But Edward's in a state of stasis. In this stasis, again, he's content until Bella Swan arrives. And the way that we have added value is in Edward's thoughts. And that seems very simple, and it seems very, it seems very pedestrian to say that. And in some ways it is. But what's not pedestrian is the battle that he has with him. It's a very psychological battle. He finds himself struggling between two faces, the face of the monster that's within him, and then Carlyle's face. Carlyle, of course, being his adoptive father. It's something, again, in this first chapter that you get privy to. You are immediately you are immediately introduced to this family and all of the relationships with them. And again, whenever we're reading, whenever we're watching a television show, it's the relationships that count. So that when Alice says to Edward at the end of this chapter, "You'll do the right thing," and that it wasn't a suggestion, it was an order, and Edward is saying, "Yeah, I'll do the right thing," we already get the sense that he is not going to do the right thing, and he's going to disappoint Alice, and we already feel sorry for that relationship. We already, without meeting Carlyle, already feel sorry that Edward is going down a path that he should not be going down. It's an instant hook. It's an instant hook. Will Edward succumb to the monster that has been fighting him for 70 years, but even more so now? Will he succumb to the monster and disappoint Carlyle? It's instant stakes. And we haven't even met Carlyle yet. We haven't even gotten a chance to talk to him, see him, understand what he's about. We just get flashes from Edward about Carlyle's face. And it's funny, that battle with Edward and his monster is also a hook. Letting Carlyle down is a hook. Well, no, I'm sorry. It's not a hook. That relationship is what keeps it going. The hook is, will Edward kill Bella? The hook is, this guy's a vampire, and the fancy part of it all, the one, again, that does add value, is Edward planning to kill this entire classroom of children. And the fact that it's so well written when Stephanie Meyer says they were just collateral damage, all of them. It's just collateral damage. I could go up this row within 5 seconds and kill all of them. There'd be a little bit of a screen. There'd be a little bit of a tussle. So I couldn't kill Bella first. So she'd have to wait, and she would have to see what was coming towards her, which is something that he doesn't want to do. But he knows that if he doesn't do it, then her blood will dry out and she'll be cold and wouldn't be as good. there's some flashy writing about her blood and about how he can't stand her, how it makes him feel, obviously. Though, there's some interesting stuff here. There's some interesting stuff in that he already hates her. He hates her for how he makes him feel. And he hates her because he already knows that he has to pay for the sins of his past. And he felt like his mundane life in Forks, the one that he was content with, not fully satisfied, but content, he already feels like that mundane, content life is his punishment for his sins. Yet, here he is with Bella, and she is the inciting incident. She is what he considers to be the real punishment now. And he hates her for it. And he hates himself for it. Which, again, feeds into this battle of his monster. This is something that we definitely do not get. And this was the most attractive thing to me in this book. Yes, it's great to hear Edward, how he was flirting with Mrs. Cope and how he could, you know, hear her thoughts. And she's saying, oh, yeah, he's too young. He's like, yeah, I'm older than your grandfather. Great stuff. And it's good to hear how he could say, yeah, I could slam her head down on the desk and it'd be two lives instead of 25. You know, it's an even trade. That's all good, flashy, fun stuff. But it is the emotional through line that we're going to be finding is this battle within Edward. And as a work unto itself, it makes sense. As a work unto itself, the inciting incident has to not only carry us forward, but it has to carry us forward in an interesting way. And you can already see that he's trying to avoid it. He's trying to get out of class. He's trying to walk away. He's becoming sloppy to avoid Bella. He's already moving. He moves literally too quickly to get out. He drives 200 miles an hour to get away from Bella. But as much as he hates her, in the text, you see that he likes her at the same time. It becomes, instead of the cool, calming presence that he normally is in his mundane life, he acts rashly and acts in a way that would not be good for their family. And it's this mundane life that he is trying to hang on to by leaving, by holding back, by doing all the things that he is trying to do in the first sight chapter. But that mundane life is, as in most of these stories, is going to be put to the test. And that test is already put forward by the end of the chapter. And Alice sees it. That recognition is a that recognition of what Edward really can do and is going to do unless something changes is a perfect insight into that relationship. When she says, "We'll miss you," they honestly will. And you, at the end of this chapter, are left wondering, what is Edward going to do? So as a work unto its own, and again, I think I'm going to approach this as a work unto its own. As a work unto its own, I am not only hooked by the idea of vampires and how their world exists, how they've maintained their world, where did they come from, why has it been so long, how are they standing within these communities, how is Esme being invited to other people's birthday parties or garden parties, whatever the hell it was, how is why is Jasper the way that he is? How does the family dynamic work? How is Carlisle an adoptive father? We already know that Carlisle is a vampire himself too, but like, what about him makes him this kind of father figure for Edward? The hook is there, absolutely. And there isn't quite yet the emotional connection quite yet. But we have a basic understanding of the relationships. We understand how we have a fundamental guideline of the establishment of the family dynamic within the Cullen family. And it's a fun little intriguing bit here with Edward and seeing how everybody reacts to them, how everybody's kind of scared of them, and how he is already privy to all of their thoughts. And there's another hook in that Bella, he can't hear her thoughts. Why can he not hear her thoughts? What is blocking him from hearing her thoughts? This is all quite interesting stuff, and it's coming from his perspective, obviously. So, by itself, Midnight Sun, I'm kind of in. I wonder, will Midnight Sun, like, honestly, writing this book must have been extremely difficult. And you wouldn't think that it would be, because she's already written Twilight, Stephanie Meyer. But as a writer, you have your own, it's like writing Outlander from Frank's perspective. Right? Or it's like, or better yet, it's like writing Outlander from Jamie's perspective. Now, I know that there are some times when Jamie's perspective is on display. But, you know, Diana is so in tune with Claire's character that it would be hard to imagine her writing from Jamie's perspective. And the same thing has to go with Stephanie Meyer. It must be hard to write from Edward's perspective, because she was so, Stephanie Meyer, so in on Bella's point of view, that you have to fundamentally change how you write, because you're writing an entirely different person. Now, I did talk about the exclamation points and how they pissed me off, and that is obviously a carryover from Twilight. That is, I think, is just a fundamental, foundational aspect of her writing style. And it is funny going from Diana to Stephanie Meyer. It is a funny transition. But especially going from Diana to J.K. Rowling to now Stephanie Meyer, definitely a weird transition. Just because J.K. Rowling is just such a, and I hate to say this, but she's just like such a perfect writer in so many ways. So to go from reading her to Stephanie Meyer it's funny, to say the least. It's so funny. It's like going from having a really intelligent conversation with somebody to having a conversation with like a millennial's kid. I don't know how to explain it like that, other than that. At any rate, yeah, writing it from Edward's perspective and changing how you fundamentally consider things and write things is very difficult. And I do wonder if she will, like, you have to take the dialogue from the book, from Twilight, and apply it to Midnight Sun. But it's a different language with Midnight Sun. It would be like saying, let's take Macbeth but write it from Lady Macbeth's perspective. And not only do that, but let's put it in Greek, right? That's what it feels like to me. And I applaud Stephanie Meyer for doing this. I think a lot of people are saying, oh my God, she's got to go back to that well. And, you know, it's been how many years and she's probably running out of money and all that. And I think those are all unfair criticisms. I think when you have a story in your heart and you are so fully connected to it that you, there are things within you that need to come out. And if she felt so inclined to write a book from Edward's perspective, then I think it's fair. I think it's fair game to read and discuss and analyze on its own. Again, which is the spirit of Blake's book club for Midnight Sun. Does Midnight Sun stand on its own as a work? Does it need Twilight to exist? That is the point of Blake's book club for this story. And my experience with the first chapter is, while I do know the outcome of what's going to happen, Midnight Sun offers me a perspective, in Edward's case, that allows me to see more of him. It amplifies his character in a way that I did not expect. Now, does Edward talk about the monster or whatever in other books? Maybe. Probably. But here's the thing. I don't remember. And if I don't remember, it, to me, that doesn't scream that it was that important in the original series. But if I already know this monster in the first chapter, and it's such a vital element to how Edward reacts and interacts with this, with Bella and everybody else, that means it's important and it needs to be analyzed and discussed. You know, as Edward was talking about Bella and how he was trying to not breathe, like he didn't need air. And he was trying to resist her. Like, all I kept thinking was me eating Ben and Jerry's chocolate chip cookie dough ice cream. It's like you convince yourself ways that it would be okay to do so. You find excuses to do it and you plan ways around it. Like, I could do this and I could do that and I could hide it so that my wife doesn't see it, so she doesn't know that I'm eating the ice cream. But you know, it's okay. And if I'm going to do it, I might as well just keep going. That's how I felt while reading that. And as funny as that is, and as unrelatable as being a vampire is and sucking someone's blood, or going to their house and stalking them to prepare for a kill, you can relate to the idea of eating chocolate chip cookie dough ice cream. And you understand what that feels like. And you understand the battle. Let's say if you're on Weight Watchers, you guys know what it's like. You know what it's like to be like, oh man, I want that, but I know I can't have it. Like, I could go have some kale. I could eat all the kale in the world, but it ain't gonna work. I mean, it will work because I won't be hungry. But that chocolate chip cookie dough ice cream's looking pretty damn good right now. And you salivate at the thought of it. And you you find ways to convince yourself to either do it or not do it. And you give yourself excuses. And yeah, it's really funny. So as I was reading, I was laughing to myself thinking about chocolate chip cookie dough ice cream, which is pretty funny. At any rate, we are already at 34 minutes and 20 seconds for this first chapter. I don't intend on any of these recordings, as you guys are well aware from the Outlander ones. Usually I go between 10 to 18 minutes or so for each chapter. But I mean, this is a celebration of Midnight Sun and getting back into that world and getting back into the Twilight universe. It's a special universe, you know, regardless of whatever, however pop culture looks back on it, and regardless of however it ages, Twilight fundamentally changed the young adult novels in a way that like the Hunger Games did, but I think Twilight did so even more than the Hunger Games. And I would also say like there was Harry Potter, you know, for like my age and younger. I was in college when Harry Potter came out, so I really can't say. I feel like the generation after mine, like that, when I was 25 and there were people that were like 10 and 15, they were, or 10 to 15, they were like really into Twilight. Like that's their version of Harry Potter. So what Harry Potter is to me, that would be, Twilight would be to that age. What I'm getting at is, it has cultural significance, Twilight does, and it is worthy of our remark. It is worthy of our analyses. And looking at it from, looking at Twilight and Midnight Sun from an analytical point of view and from trying to discover what its merits are, is worthy of our time. It's worthy of your time. It's worthy of Blake's Book Club. So that's that. I would say that the book starts off in a place that keeps me engaged and in a place of curiosity. And I enjoy how Stephanie Meyer can go off, and I hearken back to what Mary says, how Stephanie Meyer writes Butterflies. She does have a gift for getting you involved. She has a gift for setting scene and conveying feeling. Much in the way that, you know, George R. R. Martin has a gift for writing character detail, or how Diana Gabaldon has a gift for setting a physical scene. Or how J.K. Rowling has a gift for giving you characterization without having to tell you characterization. Stephanie Myers is setting up feeling. And that's what matters most, right? If you read this and you feel, that's good. That is great. And I felt the battle. I felt that urge for... I understood the urge, especially when he called everybody collateral damage. These people were dead already, and they didn't even know it. It is a little maudlin. it is a little angsty. But when I gotta go back and read it because it was so great. I bear with me as I find it. I apologize. Hold on one second. Because it was just so well written. And like, as I'm flipping through these pages, like we're already introduced to like Angela and Jessica and Mike Newton. We already get a sense of who they are. Like it's great. Like how Jessica's so worried about what Mike Newton thinks and all, and how she's so jealous of the new girl, and like, oh my God, it was awesome. All right, so oh man, where is it? I gotta find this. I have to find this. This is oh my God, come on, where is it? Okay, yes, here it is. Bella Swan walked into the flow of heated air that blew toward me from the vent. Her scent hit me like a battering ram, like an exploding grenade.
There was no image violent enough to encompass the force of what happened to me in that moment. Instantly, I was transformed. I was nothing close to the human I'd once been. No trace of the shreds of humanity I'd managed to cloak myself in over the years remained. I was a predator. She was my prey. There was nothing else in this whole world but that truth. There was no room full of witnesses. They were allegedly collateral. They were already collateral damage in my mind. The mystery of her thoughts was forgotten. Her thoughts meant nothing, for she would not go on thinking them much longer. I was a vampire, and she was the sweetest blood I'd smelled in more than 80 years. Oh, my God. I just love that line. I love that line. There was no room full of witnesses. They were already collateral damage in my mind. How great is that? They're just dead already. They're just dead, and they don't even know it. And then, like, he goes on to, you know, talk about how he was planning on snapping next, and like, oh man, it was great. Oh, awesome stuff. Awesome. Oh, and here's another great one too. For one short second, I was able to think clearly. In that precious instant, I saw two faces in my head, side by side. One was mine, or rather, had been. The red-eyed monster that had killed so many people that I'd stopped counting. Rationalized, justified murders. I'd been a killer of killers, a killer of other, less powerful monsters. It was a god complex. I acknowledged that, deciding who deserved a death sentence. It was a compromise with myself. I had fed on human blood, but only by the loosest definition. My victims were, in their various dark times, barely more human than I was. And the other face was Carlyle's. There was no resemblance between the two faces. They were bright day and blackest night. There was no reason for resemblance to exist. Carlyle was not my father in the basic biological sense. We had shared no common features. The similarity in our color was a product of what we were. Every vampire was corpse pale. The similarity in color of our eyes was another matter, a reflection of mutual choice. And you see a development here of Edward, that he thinks that he could be like Carlyle, that he could live on like Carlyle, that like, because of the choices he's made over the years, his face, his goal is Carlyle. His goal is to have this sort of simple, carefree, loving, warm existence. But it's his one issue is Bella. Oh, man. Ah, good stuff. And it's the one thing that, oh, man, it's the one thing that she is that he wants most is what makes him pain most. And, you know, that of course, is indicative of the things that you love, I suppose. Oh, my God, I love this too. My hand gripped under the edge of the table as I tried to hold myself in my chair. The wood was not up to the task. My hand crushed through the strut and came away with a palm full of splintered pulp, leaving the shape of my fingers carved into the remaining wood. Destroy evidence. That was a fundamental rule. I quickly pulverized the edge of the shapes of my fingertips, leaving nothing but a ragged hole in the pile of shavings on the floor, which I scattered with my foot. Destroy evidence. Collateral damage. I knew what had to happen now. The girl would have to come sit beside me, and I would have to kill her. The innocent bystanders in this classroom, 18 other children and one man, could not be allowed to leave, having seen what they would soon see. Oh, man. Awesome. Awesome stuff. Like legitimately, having this moment with Edward is a great hook, and wondering whether or not he'll be able to fulfill it. And will that stasis, will that mode of stasis be interrupted by him killing this girl, killing all of the people, leaving? How will he handle this? And will he let down Carlyle? That battle with him and Carlyle and his monster is what keeps this book. You can see it. This is the emotional through line for the book, and it helps enlighten that relationship. So we will continue to watch that going forward. So that is that for now. Now I'm at 4508, so we will stop it right now. Thank you guys for listening. This is the first chapter, of which there will be plenty more. From what I can see, there are over 650 pages in this book. So you will be with me for quite some time as we read this. So again, thank you so much. I hope you liked it. If you did not, please tell me why you think it sucked, and I am happy to change it. So that's that. Until the next time, ladies and gentlemen, I'll see you next chapter.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.